Before you hear their names announced at Rogers Center, you'll first hear them on Around the Nest, Jay talking around the Blue Jays minor league system.
Welcome into the latest Around the Nest, Jay talking our way around the Blue Jays organization. I'm Jessica Griggs-Strasser with the Lansing Lugnuts, and let's lead off, as we always do this year, with Jim Tarabocchia, voice of the Dunedin Blue Jays. Jim, how are you?
Jesse, how's it going, buddy?
It's going well. I'm looking at your team schedule, and here's what I see. And we've talked about this in the past, but just this past week, last Friday, the last time that we talked, postponed. The next day, you play game one, game two, suspended. The next day, Sunday, you have to play two because you've got to complete the suspended game. All right, Monday, postponed. Tuesday, doubleheader. Wednesday, postponed. What a schedule for your team. How is everybody managing?
Yeah, I think we have the perfect coaching staff to help manage this thing and to keep these guys focused on what they need to do and to stick to their plan every day. Again, it's not easy, and I think it is hard on everybody, and it comes to a point where everybody, me included, you say to yourself, you know, that this is ridiculous. Not having the home field and basically playing on the road all year long. I mean, we played the complex last week because of the bad storms that we got that just obliterated Jack Russell Memorial Stadium in Clearwater. So, yeah, it's not easy. And I think with what our coaching – again, I say this every week, I feel like, but with what our coaching staff has done to help these guys really acclimate, they should be the coaching staff of the year. I mean, at this point, and again, this is a team that has 61 wins, and it's a tough stretch that we're going through right now. Every team goes through that when they have the best circumstances. For me, just watching this team with 61 wins, best winning percentage in the league, best winning percentage throughout the Toronto organization still, even though it's been a tough stretch, still 22 games. 22 games over 500. That's about as good as it gets. And to have all these roadblocks and circumstances in front of us this year, it goes to show you the character of our coaching staff, of manager Cesar Martin, who you've spoken highly about in the past. Everybody I've talked to has spoken highly about him in the past and his leadership ability. And the guys that we have, on our ball club this year and kind of the personality of the team to let things roll and just keep going and keep pushing through. But, I think sometimes that even that personality, whether it be in baseball or any point in life, when you do let things constantly roll, when there's roadblock after roadblock, even it gets to the best of them. And I think, maybe it's getting to the guys a little bit here in regards to just being tired and having to go through this grind of constant doubleheaders and suspended games and starting and stopping. So, hopefully as we move along here into August, things kind of level out a little bit and even out, and we can get back to a regular schedule and just keep on going and push for the playoffs.
The individual performances that stood out to me this week, another series of fine games for Cal Stevenson. How was it?
Again, he is pretty much what this team is personality-wise. Just keep letting it roll. Don't focus on too much of one thing. Just keep on going and keep on coming to the ballpark and ready to play every day. And that's consistently what he does on a daily basis. I've talked about it before with him. He's the type of ball player who you won your organization for a very long time. And he is he is a baseball player. And I think in the game of baseball, there are a lot of great athletes with tools who can make it to the big league level and guys who have very successful careers, certainly. But once they leave the game and they retire, that's it. And they go on and and do something else. And there's nothing wrong with that, by the way. I think that, you know, for a lot of people, that's certainly a positive. I mean, we saw Troy Tulowitzki retire yesterday. To me, Troy Tulowitzki is a baseball guy. He's a baseball player. And I think there's a distinct difference. And I think Cal Stevenson is a baseball player, a guy who, you know, you heard of it too. Well, he's going to now be a volunteer assistant coach at the University of Texas. I could see Cal doing something like that whenever his career does end, because he's a baseball guy. So I'm not surprised by his success and how he just keeps on rolling along, because he's a baseball player. He comes up, comes to the park every day, ready to go, sticks to his routine, has a level head about him. And I'm just happy to see him succeed on a daily basis. And it's fun watching him go throughout his routine also on a daily basis.
Fascinating question from Bluebird Banter that I'm going to ask each broadcaster this week. So let's start with you, Jim.
Sure.
Which prospects in Dunedin have the highest ceiling and the highest floor?
Yeah, that's one that's tough for me to answer, I think, right now on the spot. That's something I have to think about. I mean, you know, you're looking at guys, I think, with a lot of tools, though. You know, Chavez Young has a lot of tools. I think Cal Stevenson, as I mentioned, has tools, but he's a baseball player. I think Ryan Noda's power tool is something that is still scratching the surface. He homered this week as well, and his ability to be a average to above average fielder, a guy who can play the outfield, has a pretty strong arm. I mean, he can play a good first base, so. You know, I think with those guys outside of Chavez, you look at those just two guys, I guess, and, you know, Collins is pretty much the same way, where they're college guys, seasoned players coming out of college, who had great careers in college, and now they're, to me, they've got, you know, a pretty high ceiling. But the floor is pretty high as well. I think the floor is a little bit lower for Collin at this point. But I think with Cal and Ryan Noda, the exception of Noda's power tool, which I think could be above average, you know, their ceilings are pretty high, but their floors are pretty high as well. So that, to me, that goes to show you why they've had so much success this year at the advanced day level. I mean, you look at Ryan Noda from the jump he's made, and Cal Stevenson, the jump that he's made as well. From rookie level to now being one of the best hitters in our league. In fact, he comes into the night with third best batting average in the league, leads the league in most offensive categories since June 11th. And that's a guy right there that has a high floor, but also a pretty high ceiling as well. And then I think you look at the pitching side. I think Josh Winkowski right now, just in a short time, is anchoring this staff. And to me, and Brad Wilson was the same way before he went to AA New Hampshire. You know, but with Josh, he has a pretty high ceiling, and his floor is still pretty low. I mean, he's still learning how to pitch. Same thing with Maximo Castillo. And Maximo is starting to gain more wisdom on how to pitch. But again, this week, did an excellent job in game two of that doubleheader in what was a pretty gritty win for us, 2-0 over Fort Myers. Maximo was a huge part of that. I mean, 5 scoreless innings, or maybe it might have been 6. Either way, a scoreless outing right there. I mean, he's shown some, at times, he's really flashed brilliance, and he's shown that he has a high ceiling, and his floor is still pretty low because he's still learning how to pitch, but he has a lot of innings under his belt, so he's gained that wisdom and doing a good job of repeating his mechanics a lot more from where he was in April. So, I mean, those are the guys that stand out. Again, you as a team, you have 61 wins. There's going to be more guys. I mean, like I said, with Chavez Young, I think Kevin Vicuña has a pretty high ceiling. I think he's as good as it comes in the field. You know, I think, you know, with Samad Taylor, another guy who is a fire plug, a speedy guy, you know, his ceiling is I think, pretty high. I don't think we've really scratched the surface on what his power actually could be as well. When you look at this ball, and then Emerson Jimenez, who used to be a position player now, in a span of 2 months, pitching coach Jim Psychowski has gotten him to command his slider and throw it at any point in the count, which, you know, I'm more of a hitting guy, but to me, that said something, and that should open up eyes to everybody in the Toronto organization, how good of a job that Jim Psychowski is, you know, really doing. Same thing with Matt Young and just this whole coaching staff. And I think I really hope that people throughout the organization can actually recognize how good of a job from top to bottom, Cesar to Jake McGuigan and Matt Van Romer, I'm missing Kat and Aaron and I'm missing our high performance staff, but they're in there too. How good of a job they're all doing in the circumstances that we're in here. But just to go back and wrap it up with the question you asked, I think those are the guys right there that probably have the highest ceilings, high floors, low floors, whatever it may be.
It's interesting you mentioned Emerson Jimenez, because I recently talked with a scout who said that he was very high on Emerson. So I was wondering how he was developing.
Yeah, he's always thrown hard. He's got great arm speed. And he's another one who he's like Danny Jimenez, though, when he was here. I mean, they don't get bothered by anything. I mean, you can bring him in, bases loaded, nobody out, and they'll find a way to get out of it, or they'll limit the damage. I mean, they don't get bothered by anything. That's a huge, thing to have mentally. And I think with Emerson too, a guy who, I guess by all accounts, we can just say it, he failed as a position player. Okay. A lot of people have gone on to try to become pitchers. He's become a successful pitcher now at the advanced state level. I mean, he's still kind of learning in a way, learning on the fly. And, this is not an easy level to learn anything on the fly. And you can ask Tim Tebow that. So I think, with Emerson, it's really about just continuing to command that slider, and I think he'll be good to go. But nothing really bothers him mentally. He just kind of goes about what he's going to do. And that says that about this whole team, though. They just nothing really bothers him. It's just your body gets tired, mentally you get tired, but there's certainly there's not much. There's nobody outspoken about how this has been a pretty tough year with the circumstances. A lot of that has to do with the wins, but I think because they're kind of putting that to a side, there's not there that that's why there is a lot of winning here in Dunedin. So, and I think Emerson just fits into that that very well. And I think a big part of what I like about him is his mental approach and his ability to go out there and pitch in any given situation. And he's gone from being kind of a middle inning type guy, just getting his work in, to now being a guy who Dunedin can rely on within the standards and practices of what the Toronto Blue Jays want, our organization wants in regards to player development, but being that late inning guy, if need be, if he needs to really get a win in a big ball game.
Jim, big thanks. Thank you for the latest word with what's going on with the Jays' highly successful Florida State League affiliate.
All right, Jesse, have a good one and be safe, and we'll talk to you next week.
Yeah, here's wishing you dry weather. Jim Tarabokia, the voice of the Dunedin Blue Jays. And from Dunedin, let's go down the ladder and let me bring in Zach Helton, the voice of the advanced rookie Bluefield Blue Jays. Zach, how are you?
I'm good, Jesse. How about you?
I'm good. I'm subdued, if you can hear. This is going to be the very first Around the Nest, I believe, that I've ever actually hosted from the team bus en route to a visiting ballpark. We'll see how this whole show goes. But let me catch up with your Bluefield Blue Jays. Let's see how things are. First things first, some more wins this week and some lower run totals allowed. So let's begin with your pitching. What did you see?
I think the pitching is finally coming along, Jesse. The bullpen has looked rather well the past couple of nights, with Pulaski, the division leader in town, took 2 of 3 from them, winning last night 7-2. So I feel like this bullpen is kind of hitting their stride at the right time. And now, after last night's game, no more Pulaski on the schedule unless you see them in the playoffs, and no more Elizabethan, who is the first place team in the other division. So I think the schedule favors the Blue Jays rather well down the stretch, and I think some new arms here in town, I think it's going to be a nice little pickup, and I tell you what, it's been a sight for sore eyes. We've dealt with some bad pitching outings. And some of the guys, you know, they go out and try their best every night, but some nights you don't have it, some nights you do, and it seems like the nights that a couple of guys didn't have them all ran together. So it's been a great couple of nights in Bluefield with the pitching kind of getting together and the hitting being there as it has been all season.
You mentioned the new arms. Who do you have in there?
Austin Havkos last night got the save in his second outing at Bluefield. One of the things I really like about this kid, he's a long, lanky right-hander, throws a heavy ball, and he works fast. I think last night I mentioned on the broadcast he was pitching like he left his oven on in the apartment, and it was a very quick ball game anyway, but sometimes at the rookie level, those things seem to drag on. So it's great to see somebody who says, "Give me the ball, let's go." And Havkos has been one of the many bright new arms coming to town. Juan DePaula, we saw him on a rehab outing a few weeks ago. He came in and shoved. It was beautiful. And I think the guys kind of fed off him being there. And Kyle Huckabee has kind of came out of his shell. Nazwal Pelina has had a good couple of outings here over the last week or so. Felipe Castaneda last night had six solid innings. And I tell you what, Joel Concepcion, two nights ago, probably has had his best professional outing. He shut down a very potent Pulaski Yankees offense and got the win. And, man, he was on. It was fun to watch. So this pitching staff, I think, is putting it together as we head towards August and down this final month or so of the season. I think the Bluefield Blue Jays are going to be right in the mix of things as they have been the past couple of years.
One pitcher that you didn't mention is a guy that I first saw when he was an outfielder. How's Aldo Ovando's conversion coming to the mound?
He's had a few rough outings, but he came in, it was either last night or night before. I can't quite put my finger on it, but he had a good, I think, inning and a half, two innings of work, and didn't give up a run and had some good control. He gave up, he actually took the loss down at Burlington the last game on getaway day there last weekend. In an extra inning game, they brought him in to kind of shut the door, and he gave up a couple of runs late and ended up taking the loss. But last night, I think it was last night or night before, I'd have to go back and look, but he had a great outing, and it was in relief. Didn't get the save or anything, but it was a solid outing. I think he's on the right track. You can tell he's athletic. He gets up to the mound, and he just has that command, you know. He feels like he's supposed to be there. And some pitchers, you know, at this level, they're just trying to get their footing and still a little overwhelmed with pro ball. And I think Ovando has been there and done that. And he's fitting into a new spot, and I think he likes it rather well. And I think he's still got some learning to do. But after that outing there the other night, I think he's on the right track.
You mentioned Joel Concepcion. I'm looking over Felipe Castaneda right now. In terms of 10 ground outs, 0 outs in the air yesterday to go along with 5 strikeouts, would you consider those to your top 2 pitching prospects? And in terms of starting pitching?
Right now, yes, definitely. Felipe last night, I think the first guy of the ball game got on with a single. Next pitch, 5-4-3 double play got him out of the inning, or got him out of the leadoff single. And then I think he had 5 or 6 strikeouts last night. So, you know, he was letting the defense play behind him. And one thing we've got in Bluefield other than hitting is defense. So I think any of these pitchers who come on the mound, whether it be Felipe or Joel or any of the bullpen guys, they know they've got, you know, 7 solid guys behind him and usually a great catcher in Guerra, Bradley, whoever goes back there. Can handle this staff, and it's been fun. And the pitching, like we've mentioned a few times, Jesse, has been the issue. Big innings with runs for the offense, and then, you know, a couple of innings later, the bullpen gives it right back. But this past week, that's not been the issue. The Jays have got the runs on the board, and the bullpen and the starters have all worked together and kept the other team's offense to a minimum, and that's all you can ask for at this level. And the guys are going out to compete, and I'm there every day. You can watch them just get better, and it's fun to watch. I think that's one of my favorite things about this level is, you know, a lot of the guys coming straight from college or the Gulf Coast or Dominican Summer League, you know a little bit about them, but not much. But you can kind of grow with them throughout the year, and this pitching staff, if they continue to grow, like I said, they're going to be trouble down the stretch.
The Bluebird banter around the next question of the week: which players on your team have the highest ceiling and which players have the highest floor?
Highest ceiling, I tell you what, Ryan Slonniger has came in and looked rather well at catching and DH. He's sitting over 400 right now. David Schneider making a return trip to Bluefield. And some guys get sent back to Bluefield or stay in Bluefield for another year. They kind of sulk on it a little bit. Davis has not done that. He's looked both tremendous in the field, playing first or playing second and third, and at the plate he's hitting .371. I tell you what, Spencer Horwitz, kind of a local guy, played his college ball at Radford. He came out hot early in the year. He's still hitting over 300, .316. So those guys, along with the usuals, Leonardo Jimenez and Miguel Giraldo, those have some high ceilings. Floor wise, I don't know. DJ Daniels is so athletic, and he could be such a tremendous ball player for this organization, or for any organization for that matter. He just has trouble with the off-speed stuff, and everyone has the scouting report now, and they've kind of fed him a fat diet. Even when bases are loaded in front of him, he's getting a heavy dose of curveballs and off-speed stuff, and he's having trouble catching up to it. And he's a fun kid to be around. He loves the game, and he wants to be here, and he wants to get better. And I hope he does. But I kind of feel he's on the floor end of that spectrum right now.
Speaking with Zach Helden, the voice of the Bluefield Blue Jays, Zach, what are you looking forward to this coming week?
Well, I've actually got a few days off. The Jays are on the road in Danville for three, which is a pretty huge series. But, everything with, the short season is kind of big. So I think getting three down there, maybe getting two out of three, would be big for this team, who seems to be on a little bit of a roll here. And then Monday is the off day, so they can regroup before coming back home and having peak sport. And I think this last month of the year is going to be fun to watch. The schedule plays out rather nice for them. They've got some good games at home. And going down the stretch, if this team continues to grow like they have in the past couple of weeks, I think the ceiling is the roof, as Michael Jordan would say.
Zach, thank you very much. I appreciate you joining us and letting us know everything going on down in the Appy League.
Jesse, always great to be on, and go Blue Jays.
Absolutely. Now let me bring in the voice of the AA New Hampshire Fish Cats, Tyler Murray. Tyler, how are you?
Jesse, my guy, I'm doing real well.
Well, let's talk about your guys, and let's begin. How good was Nate Pearson the other day?
Almost even better, if you can believe it, than the box score would suggest. 5 2/3 innings, only walked one guy. The only other base runner was on one of his 8 strikeouts on a wild pitch. So pretty impressive stuff. Didn't give up took that no-hitter all the way into the 7th inning. So it's been impressive to watch him really get on these rolls where he just dominates opponents. And it was great to see him pitch into the 6th inning for the first time in Double A.
Yeah.
Have you seen him grow? How have you seen him from the time that he first joined New Hampshire to now? How is he a different pitcher?
What we're learning about him is that he is a weight room junkie, which you don't necessarily see from every guy with that kind of talent. He also has the work ethic to go along with it. That's great to see. And it's been interesting because a lot of times you hear these hard-throwing pitchers get here to Double-A and they realize, well, I just can't throw my fastball by these guys anymore because everyone's throwing pretty hard. Well, nobody but Nate Pearson's throwing 100. So he can still get away with throwing that fastball, but he's really worked on the secondary stuff. And for him to be able to focus on that, even with a pretty dominant number one pitch, that's been impressive to see. So I think he realizes that when he does get to the majors, he'll have to certainly rely on that fastball, but if he has everything else working for him as well as it has been lately, he's going to be that complete pitcher that every big league team is looking for.
There's no question he's your number one pitching prospect. But right from the start, I believe your number one hitting prospect, position player prospect, has been Kevin Smith. What have you seen from Kevin in terms of how he's grown from the start of the year up until recently?
We're loving Kevin right now. He's got a home run every two games, so seven in his last 13, and he's being much more patient lately. He's not going after breaking balls on two strikes as much as he used to. And the strikeout numbers for him, I think they're a little bit higher this year than you would have expected after last season, but what manager Mike Mordecai has told us is that they're going back to basics with him, and you hear that all the time, you know, just shorten the swing, keep it simple, don't overthink it. But for him, he's just such a talented hitter that all they want him to do right now is make contact. And it sounds simple, but because he's got such a live bat that can go to all fields with huge power, really when he makes contact, good things are going to happen. And the more and more you watch him with his approach of just, let's get this ball in play and see where it goes, it's working out a lot better for him. So this is the best version of Kevin Smith we've seen yet. I think it's a bit of a shame that the first half struggles were so apparent that the batting average is probably going to stay in the low twos at best by the end of the year, but you can bet the Blue Jays are just going to maybe slice off that first half and take a good hard look at what he's accomplished since the All-Star break and hopefully take away some positive reviews from the 2019 season.
We might have already answered this question, but let me ask that Around the Nest Bluebird Banter question of the week. Who has the highest ceiling and the highest floor on your New Hampshire Fisher Cats?
Ooh, the ceiling floor question is very exciting. I mean, Nate Pearson could be the best pitcher in the major leagues if he continues on this trajectory, although I've said that about Aaron Sanchez if he can stay healthy, and unfortunately this hasn't happened throughout his career. But I've always wondered if the Blue Jays are tempted to look at Pearson right now and think, okay, if he was in the big leagues, he could probably be one of the best relievers in the game right now. Just throw your fastball and pick your best off-speed pitch and we're good to go. But I really do hope they continue him on this current path because he just can't replace power pitching in your starting rotation. So for me, he's definitely the guy that seems to have the highest ceiling. And there are a lot of different guys with a high floor as well. I'm going to give you two offensively. There are two guys that do just about everything right, and they continue to, you know, check off each of the five tools you look for, but then continue to, I think, add power this year, and that's Forrest Wall. Hit his ninth home run yesterday. It was a two-run homer to cap off a seven-run third inning. And then Santiago Espinal, who is a guy they're just desperate to find maximum playing time for. He's your everyday two-hitter and second baseman, but they've tried him out in center field because I think they realize they're going to have a pretty young, crowded infield when he does get to the major league, so why not try him in the outfield to see how he does? He's been fine, and it's exciting to see those guys develop because I think last year they were really nice pieces on the championship team. Great to have. You can't win a championship without role players like that. But now Forrest Wall and Santiago Espinal, that's your 1-2 punch in the lineup right on top of this Mike Mordecai order. So I can't imagine this team without them, the steps they've been able to make hitting for power and with much more consistency. So got to love what they've done. So those are my high floor guys, Espinal and Forrest Wall.
Let me ask you quickly. I'm about to talk, when I go over the Lansing Lugnuts, about our power delays, our lighting delays. Have you ever had anything of that sort occur to you where the game was delayed due to light failure?
Light failure, no. We've had a couple of fire alarms, a couple of times a sprinkler went off, but the number one delay we have seen, at least during my time, was 2016. A skunk got loose in left field, and it was scared, so he was in defense mode, and yes, you could smell the skunk. And it was quite an effort by our staff to be able to corner the little guy, keep him out of the stands. It was close. He was almost there. And remove him safely and in humane fashion. So that was great to see. And our fans actually had a blast with it. So, yeah, skunk delay for me is always going to be number one, I think.
That's where you find who's fearless and who is sensible. I think that even though that skunk needs to be cleared away, I would be as respectful as possible.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I went to commercial break and then hid underneath the desk because I was in full fear mode. Nothing to do with it.
I love it. And let me wrap up with you, Tyler, with the same question that I just asked Zach, which is, what are you looking forward to this coming week?
It's a five-game series against the first-place Fightin' Phils over the next 4 days. If you count yesterday, and the Fisher Cats won, going away 9-1. It was 9-0 entering the final inning. If they can find a way to win this series against the best overall team in the league, they're going to be right back in the playoff race. And maybe it sounds silly, but this team has never given up. If you follow Kevin Smith on social media, he's fired up after every win, even after a few losses. This team, I'll bet you, if they can pick up a couple of wins and gain more ground on Reading, they're really going to believe they have a chance down the stretch. And it starts tonight with Hector Perez, who looked pretty good the last time we saw him here in New Hampshire. So it's a talented enough team to make a run at it. We're enjoying the first half, second half breakdown now with a little bit more hope for teams who didn't have a great first half. And the pitcher catch just want to take advantage if they can.
Sounds good. Tyler Murray, the lieutenant, the voice of the people. Thank you very much for giving us the lowdown with what's going on with the Blue Jays AA affiliate.
Jesse, you're the GOAT. Stay great. We'll talk to you soon.
Beautiful. All right, so that was Tyler Murray. Love talking with him. Like everybody that you hear about, the voice of the Toronto Blue Jays minor league organization, it's a blast. Let me give you what's going on with the Lansing Lugnuts coming up, but first, let's go right back to the phones as soon as I can get my internet working here. How's everything going?
Everything's great, Jesse. We are in Durham, North Carolina now as the Bisons are getting set to take on the Bulls for a series. So it's been fun over the last couple of weeks. Bisons are still in a playoff hunt, so life is good here with the herd.
All right. Pat Mollicaro, the voice of the Buffalo Bisons. Let's talk about your Bisons, and let me first start with what stood out to you from this past week's worth of games.
Well, I think this is a Bisons team that has just really continued to progress as a team. And, you know, I watch the team on the field, off the field, and just how together they are, how much of a group they are, how even though some of the young players, veterans, they've meshed so well, and that has not been disrupted even as more players go up and down on the shuttle, as guys come back from the big leagues or get promoted from Double A. It's really, that's something that I think this year, when I look back, whether win or lose, if the Bisons make the playoffs or they don't, this is one of the more cohesive teams that I've seen in Buffalo and certainly the entirety of the Blue Jays affiliation.
The amazing game to me was your 7-homer game this past week that you won 8-1. How was that?
It was fun. 6 of the 7 home run solo shots. Bo Bichette got the party started, leading off the game with a home run off of Justin Nicolino, who was kind of like a brother to him because Nicolino actually spent 3 years living with the Bichette family in Florida when Bo's older brother Dante and Nicolino were teammates in high school. So to get the game off started that way. The ballpark is very small in Charlotte. It plays small, but really only 1 of the 7 home runs probably would have been a base hit in another ballpark. 6 to 7 were absolutely no doubters. So it was fun. And, yeah, the Bisons took advantage of the small dimensions and the small confines of Charlotte. They got good pitching as well because, you can hit 7 home runs and you can give up 7 home runs too. But the Bisons pitching with T.J. Zoik, even Andrew Sopko, who suffered the loss last night, the pitching has been just as good as the hitting, if not on the same level.
That's an amazing story. That's something I'd never realized because I got to see Justin Nicolino working his way through the system. When it was him, it was Aaron Sanchez, and it was Noah Syndergaard as the big three. So what a fascinating other connection. And there he is still trying to work his way up to become a major league regular. Fascinating to see how paths have diverged. The Bluebird Banter question that I've been giving every broadcaster, Pat, has been who on each team, so who on your Buffalo Bisons, has the highest ceiling, A, and the highest floor, B?
Oh, I mean, honestly, I'll go right back to Bo Bichette. Yeah, the second best prospect in the organization behind Vladdy, top 15 prospect in all of baseball. It's hard not to think of him as the highest ceiling on this team and a guy who the floor, it's as close as possible for the floor and the ceiling. That's the thing about this team. There, you can look at the pitching staff, so maybe someone like Zach Jackson can be part of the conversation as well. If he has found his way throughout the course of this year, now leads the team and the International League in wins with 8 as a reliever. That's no small accomplishment. So the way he's pitched the past 2.5 months has been as good as anybody in this league, using that curveball first and then the fastball following. So that's just a couple of guys, but the guys you'd expect, right? I mean, the players we kind of talk about week after week, and they continue to perform at no matter what level they're at.
You have so many different players who have been in the major leagues this year who have been sent back to regain their confidence, to find their stroke, to work on specific things. Have you had your opinion changed on any player, whether from the start of the season to now or at any point up till now, for the better? Has there been any player who, whatever it was, development, a light bulb moment, or you've said in watching him, oh, I really like where he is right now at this point, July the 26th?
In terms of guys that have come down from the big leagues, I always try and reserve judgment, but, you know, Socrates Brito struggled so much in the big leagues, saw the numbers that he had in AAA the last couple of years that just didn't translate. But, I, you know, it's always, and I talked about right at the outset about how fun this team is and how much they're together. And I think you can point to Brito as a guy that could have come down after getting DFA'd, could have just gone through the motions, but he worked really hard. His defense has never been an issue. The hitting is right there. He's been hitting 300 for Bisons ever since being DFA'd by the Jays. And he has not had one of those moments where he's just sat and pouted and felt like he got a raw deal. And I think that really translates in the clubhouse, leading by example. So I think Brito, in terms of a guy who is in the big leagues, and then I'll go back to Zach Jackson, one of these young relievers that really struggled at the start of the season. You know, he could not find his curveball early, could not command the strike zone. And he's probably the shining example of a Bison bullpen with guys like Taylor Saucedo, who has 5 wins as well. They are guys that struggled at AAA to start the year, but they have figured it out. They've learned throwing strikes, giving up hits can be okay, because at the same time, the defense behind these guys is good enough with a guy like Jonathan Davis in center, or Bo up the middle with whoever's at second, usually Richard Urania. The defense is good enough, so let the team put it in play. If they strike out, great. But if they put it in play, more often than not, the defense is going to get the better of these hitters. So I think those are 2 examples right there.
Pat, let's wrap up with this. Is Charlotte really the most beautiful ballpark in the minor leagues?
I think, yeah, it's hard. I'll have to say yes, but walking around downtown Durham today and the way this ballpark, I think if you just look in terms of the ballpark itself, Durham maybe has the best in the league, but Charlotte, with the backdrop that continues to get busier and busier, it definitely is one of those spots where you open up the window, it's up mid-80s, but there's no humidity the way it was this week. That's what summer baseball really feels like. I love calling games in my hometown, and I love coming to the ballpark every day at Salem Field, but when you're down here, and it's mid-80s, and it's perfect weather, and the buildings are glistening with the sunlight. It is really probably the best in the minors.
Pat, big thanks. Voice of the Herd, Pat Mollicaro. Appreciate you spending some time and letting us know what's going on with the Jays AAA affiliate.
Thanks, Jesse. Talk to you next week.
Oh, you got it. From Pat with Buffalo, let me bring in Rob Fay with the Vancouver Canadiens. Rob, how are you this week?
I am well, and I'm sorry that I'm tardy, but better late than never, I guess.
No worries. This has been a fun Around the Nest episode for me, because it began while I was on the team bus, and then I continued it while walking through the ballpark after having arrived at our destination, a commuter road trip, and so now I'm in the visitor's broadcast booth. So I've gone on my own separate journey while recording this week. Let's talk about your Vancouver Canadiens, and let's begin with, hey, Will Robertson went yard the other day. How's Will looking?
Will is probably the biggest turnaround on this team right now, Jesse. And when you're looking at 2019 prospects, I mean, Tanner Morris has been a little hot and cold for me. There's a story behind the story there with Tanner Morris. I'll get to that before everything's said and done. But Will Robertson was a power guy out of Creighton, and sometimes that can be the biggest blessing and a curse when you first come out of school. Oh, here comes the power guy, because you immediately look for those numbers. And he struggled in the first month of the season, but those numbers have caught up to him. And I will just say this. I've been at that ballpark for 14 seasons now. outside of maybe Art Charles or Balbino Fuenmayor hitting a moonshot, I would put the one that he hit last night up against all of them. It was a blast, and it made you realize that he's in the Conine conversation, which I think is a good problem to have for the Blue Jays.
That's good. All right, so there's Will hitting. And now let's talk about the Northwest League Pitcher of the Week, the King, Adam Kloppenstein, also coming around.
I would say absolutely. And the thing that you like about him is it seems like the head is catching up to the body now. And the thing that I like about Kloss is he's working really well with Philip Clark. That seems to be a consistent battery that Casey Candel is putting together. Clark, of course, has caught some of the best NCAA pitchers that are available. And I think to myself, it's rubbing off right now on King Kloss as he's the self-proclaimed king of Twitter. But I will say the one thing that I like is no two pitches seem to be the same at this point. It just seems like he's finally feeling comfortable. He's got a feel for the baseball. Took on Tri-City twice, both victories. Came in with an ERA under one. But more than anything, the hits were down, the walks were down, and he's starting to look like a dominant third rounder, which is why I think they paid over slot to get him in the first place.
All right. So that's Kloss. That's Will. Maybe either one of them, maybe both, will be answers to this next question, which I've been asking each broadcaster. Who on Vancouver is the highest ceiling, and who has the highest floor?
Ooh, that's a great question. I would say that the highest ceiling right now is probably Adam Kloppenstein, just because of the expectation. And the body is so unique. It's 18 years old, but it's 6'6". It's 235 pounds. And it's almost like watching Bambi on ice. And if he can ever grow into his body and understand what the arm's doing and the legs are doing and how they could work together for his betterment, the sky's the limit for him. I really believe that Adam Kloppenstein, he's a guy that you're eventually going to put in the same conversation as a guy like Aaron Sanchez, as a guy like Justin Nicolino or Noah Syndergaard, maybe with less velocity. The floor, boy, I'll tell you, Tanner Morse for me right now is a guy that was taken pretty high by the Toronto Blue Jays. He's a middle infielder out of the University of Virginia. And the problem right now is he's not swinging the bat. He looks uncomfortable in the box. And yes, he's drawing a handful of walks. He leads our team in that category. But just it just seems clunky right now. And I think he'd be a guy that could really use an off-season program, get to spring training, start working with some of those real in-depth hitting coaches, and just reinvent himself, because I don't even think he looks tired. I'm actually surprised that the Blue Jays valued him with the pick that they took him in, because right now what I see and the round he was taken in don't match up.
Right. Rob, joining us, talking some Vancouver Canadians. There have been some players who've returned to you, players that you had last year. I remember we started off talking about Brett Wright. We talked about your high expectations from McGregory Contreras. It feels like it's been more the new guys than the old guys who've been carrying you.
Yeah, it has been. That's a great point. And a guy that I think you need in your clubhouse is Brett Wright. And in addition to his home run that he hit, with two outs, bottom of the ninth, Canadians down one, it was a 3-2 count, and he hugs the left field post and ties the game up, and we win it in extras. But more than just that one hit, it's his candor, it's his joy, it's his zest for baseball that I think spreads throughout that clubhouse. And I like Brett Wright. Do I think he's a major leaguer? No. Do I think he's in this organization in 2 years? No. But I do think he's a guy that you need in a clubhouse when you're trying to keep things light. Flip side of that coin is McGregory Contreras. Actually, you know what? I could almost change it from Tanner Morse to McGregory Contreras when it comes to the floor players, because there's so much God-given talent there. He's got an arm. He's got speed. He's got a huge bat when he puts it all together. But right now, it's just all you have to do is show up to the ballpark and throw sliders. He's an automatic out. And now in the outfield, yes, he's catching the ball, but he's picked up a really weird trait, which is where he's trying to entice a runner to steal or to advance on his arm, and he double pumps, he triple pumps, and then that runner goes and ends up advancing safely. And you can just see Casey Candel's hair turning more gray, because for some reason the fundamentals have gotten away from McGregory, and it's heartbreaking because there's so much there, but so little being displayed right now.
The Vancouver Canadians have just wrapped up a homestand in which, first, they swept Tri-City again. Tri-City does not want to take on the Seas any more than that. And then they lost two in a row to Everett before salvaging the series finale. Now they're on the road at Spokane before playing at Boise. Let me ask you, Rob, as we wrap up, I just heard from Pat and his thoughts on going to Charlotte, going to Durham. Is there a favorite road ballpark for you in the Northwest League?
Well, my home is unfortunately, the ace in the deck. So I'm going to plug Vancouver really quickly. But where we are tonight in Spokane at Avista Stadium is a pretty good plan B if you can't make it up to Vancouver. Avista Stadium packs in about 7,000, and they do pack them in, and they do a lot of things well. Their food at the ballpark is outstanding. The sight lines are good. It goes foul pole to foul pole with fans packed all the way around. And then they do a lot of things with the Indigenous community here. They do a lot of things to keep their ballpark sparkling. And I just think even though we don't have the sight lines of a Durham or a Charlotte, I think when you come to the ballpark and there's a free place for you to park, the food's really good, and the ballpark is clean, that's the kind of experience that you want. So I would definitely put my penny in the can of the Spokane Indians to give them a thumb up.
At Rob Fay on Twitter, listen to him as he calls Vancouver Canadians baseball. Rob, thank you very much.
Jesse, you're the best, man. Enjoy tonight's call.
All right, thank you. So from Rob, and we've talked to Pat with AAA Buffalo, Zach with Advanced Rookie Bluefield, Tyler Murray with the AA New Hampshire Fisher Cats, and we begin with Jim Tarabokia and the A-Advanced Needham Blue Jays. I'm Jesse Goldberg-Strassler, and let's talk now about the Lansing Lugnuts and everything that's going on with the Lugnuts. The first thing, I hinted at this before. So the Lugnuts played an interesting one the other day. Yesterday was great, by the way. The Lugnuts won 8-0. They matched their largest margin of victory the whole year. Fitz Dadler, 5 scoreless innings, combining with Troy Watson, Joey Pulido, and Juan Nunez on a 6-hit shutout. Ryan Gold had a 2-run homer and an RBI double. Gabriel Moreno had a 2-run homer and an RBI double. In a ballpark, Fifth Third Ballpark, home of the West Michigan Whitecaps, where it's very difficult to hit home runs. And these two guys went deep. Ryan Gold went to the right of the batter's eye. Gabriel Moreno took it out to left center. Those are shots at Comstock Park, Michigan. Really admirable blows. Griffin Conine was 2-for-4, and it looked like he was going to have a home run. He lasered one off the wall in right field. It was not in the ballpark by very much, maybe a couple of feet higher. It, too, is gone. So the Lugnuts exploded yesterday. Their record now is 16-16 for the year. Now, the day before that, we played an eighth inning. The Lansing Lugnuts and the West Michigan Whitecaps to open up the series. Score was tied 1-1 entering the eighth. The eighth inning lasted 82 minutes, an hour 22. In the top half of the eighth inning, the Lugnuts had the potential tie-breaking run at second base, Ryan Gold in the batter's box, and the lights went down. And a couple of days earlier, we had had lightning strike one of the light towers here. There was a storm while the Whitecaps were on the road, and lightning struck the tower, and it blew chunks out of the concrete at the base. It fried the electricity here in the ballpark, the power grid. They had electricians in working hard, make sure that they were ready for baseball. And they had everything all ready for baseball until the top of the eighth inning with one out and a runner at second. And two light towers went down. Then a third light tower went down. We waited for 22 minutes, and they got everything back up and working. All right, so now we can play baseball again. Lugnuts score 2 runs, take the lead 3-1. In the bottom half of the inning, there's a single, an RBI double, there's a wild pitch, there's a fielder's choice and a throwing error by third baseman Johnny Aiello. Now the score, 3-3. There are actually 3 errors committed by the Lugnuts in the frame. There was a throwing error by Otto Lopez. They loaded up the bases, a walk by Cree Finfrock, putting a white cap at every single base, and then a disputed call on a 1-2 pitch from Finfrock. It was fouled off to the left by Jack Henley of West Michigan. The umpire first, the home plate umpire, said, okay, foul ball. And then upon argument from the third base coach and West Michigan manager, the former major leaguer Lance Parrish, he conferred with the bases umpire, and they determined catcher's interference. They awarded the runner from third home plate. The batter reached. Everybody moved up a bag, and the Lugnuts now trailed 4-3. And at that point, the lights went out again. Same light towers, one on the right side, one on the left side. Darkness. Loud groan at Fifth Third Ballpark, and we were into our second 20-minute delay of the inning. Finally, they got things back up and going. Cree Finfrock immediately strikes out the very next Whitecaps hitter, but the Lugnuts went down in order in the top of the ninth. And at that point, we're thinking, you know what, let's just close this game out. We don't want the lights to go down again. Thankfully, yesterday, the lights did not go out, and the Lugnuts won 8-0. But this has been a pretty wild start to the series between the Lugnuts and their arch rival with West Michigan. It was also good to see Griffin Conine break out of a slump. At one point, Conine had struck out 10 times in his last 11 at-bats, going 0 for 11. But a broken bat single might have ended that skid. He followed up, I told you, the rocket of a double off the right field wall. Let's see if Conine can keep that bat up and lively. The strikeouts have continued to be an issue. When he isn't striking out, it has been pretty remarkable. I believe at last check, he has 51 hits in 102 at-bats when he doesn't strike out. Among the rest of the Lansing Lugnuts, Johnny Aiello continues to get on base. His on-base streak is up to 23 games. 2 days ago, he was 3-for-4. Yesterday, he was 2-for-4. This is what they were hoping that the 14th rounder out of Wake Forest would recapture. When he was a sophomore at Wake Forest, he was a top hitter in the ACC. And then his junior year, his offensive approach took a step back. We're trying to get him back to that, where he's a slick defensive third baseman, and there's great pop in his bat for a guy who's a plus clubhouse guy. He's a very intriguing hitter as long as he hits. I think of a Cullen Large or a number of the other players that the Blue Jays have drafted over the years where they're saying, we're trying to find a player who might break out as an offensive performer, who's also a great guy, and who defensively is not going to embarrass us. And a lot of those intriguing selections. Nick Podko was another good defender, good teammate. Is he going to hit the same way that he hits in college? Well, we'll see. Now, the question of highest ceiling, highest floor, I think was misconstrued by a number of the other broadcasters. Highest ceiling, I think that's easy, right? Who's the player who, if he captures every little bit of his ability, is going to be the very best player that the team produces? And that, to my mind, is Eric Pardino. He's 18 years of age. He's the youngest player in the Midwest League. And right now, nobody's touching him, even though he has not been exactly sharp recently. Pardino still will get behind the count. A count with him might go ball one, strike one, swing and a miss. Ball two, strike two, swing and a miss. Or he might fall behind 2-0. He tosses in a fastball. The batter lazily flies out or lazily grounds out. That's been the fun thing, is that guys can't barrel him. And I think that he can get a lot better from here. So I think that Pardino has the highest ceiling. The highest floor is the question that I thought that they were misunderstanding. The highest floor guy, to my mind, is conservatively, he's going to make it. That is, you don't have to take too many projections. You don't have to say, well, this has to go right, this has to go right. Like with the Pardino, you don't have to say, well, he's got to stay healthy, and he's got to figure this out, and he might have to iron out this. An 18-year-old in single A, that comes with a lot of risk to it, doesn't it? There are things that can go wrong. So you're looking for a player who does not present a lot of risk. And in that case, the highest floor, that player who, if he falls short of it, still the floor is very high, I'll give you Gabriel Moreno. I think that Moreno, at the very least, is going to be a major league quality hitter. And that Moreno, as a catcher, you can always look for a catcher. Right now, he's athletic. He can run. I see Moreno as a guy who's going to keep on moving up through the system, just like I saw Alejandro Kirk earlier this year. I love that question. Kirk or Moreno? Scouts have been asking us that. I bet the Blue Jays are asking that question, because how nice is it to have these prospect catchers? Kirk, in my mind, is another high-floor guy. Even if he misses, he's still probably going to make the major leagues as a catcher. So I think that Moreno, even if he misses, even if he does not become an exceptional hitter like he has the potential to be, with his quick hands, with his tools, with his power that he can uncork, you know what? He should still make the major leagues. At the very least, I expect him to continue moving up through the system, and there are other players who are much more boomer bust potential. That's the way that I read that question, and I appreciate that question getting sent in to Bluebird Banter. Look for an interview with Gabriel Moreno. If you were unable to hear it on the Lansing Lugnuts airwaves, I sat down with Gabriel, and here's the way that we work this. There are players on the Lansing Lugnuts, Juan de Paula, notably, Gabriel Moreno, Juan Nunez, who do not have great command of the English language. Eric Pardino is another. And so what I've done in the past is I've interviewed these players through a translator. Last year I tried something different, and I actually think that this started several years earlier. Maybe Juan Kelly was the first player who came up with this idea.
That is writing down questions in English, giving them to the players. That way the player can practice what he's going to answer in English, and then sitting down and having an entirely English conversation. So the teammates were in the background as I interviewed Gabriel Moreno entirely in English, solamente en inglés.
This is Jesse Goldberg-Strassler, joined by Lugnuts catcher Gabriel Moreno. Gabriel, when did you first start playing baseball?
I started playing baseball. I was 4 years old in Little League. And literally, after Little League, I played with my state, my city, in my country.
Were you immediately a really good player?
Yeah, I'm a good player.
What positions have you played besides catcher?
I play shortstop. Yeah, before the catcher.
What is your favorite thing about being a catcher?
My favorite thing is when I throw to second, the runner is out. That's my favorite.
Would you rather catch a runner stealing or pick a runner off?
I like to pick the runner off.
Yeah.
It's more, most better, yeah.
How important is baseball in your family?
It's very important because my whole family, they love baseball. They love because my father, he's played baseball, my brothers, all my family plays baseball.
Did anyone else play baseball professionally in the minor leagues?
No, just me.
How proud are they of you playing baseball as a professional?
Yes, because in my family, I play baseball. My brothers,
It's okay, you can say the word in Spanish.
My younger.
Younger brother.
Yeah.
Hermano menor.
Yeah, hermano menor. He loves baseball too. Yeah.
Is he trying to get signed by a team? How old is he?
He's younger. He has 5 years old.
Mm-hmm.
He's a star, plays baseball.
That's great.
Yeah.
So you went to baseball academy. Tell me about the baseball academy.
I was 14 years old when I go to my academy. When I saw in my academy, it's a lot of things because it's difficult, but I saw they work hard every day, but it's impressive. It's surprise for me because my first thing when I look this.
Now let's go forward. You get signed to a contract. You're 16 years old.
Yeah, I was in the tryout in my academy. I played shortstop, and after that, I caught the ground ball. After that, the boss of Toronto Blue Jays, he told me, "Hey, you never catch." I say, "No, but I can throw to some throw to second." Let me check. I throw to second. After that, I hit BP in down. I signed with Toronto Blue Jays.
And the Blue Jays said, "Okay, we're moving you to catcher."
Yeah, my agent tell me, "Hey, Toronto, he wanna sign, but like catcher. I can try."
Uh-huh.
I did.
Was it tough being catcher right away? Those first few days, how was that?
My first day, I was scared because the catcher position is really hard because it's a lot of things when I do behind the play. Uh-huh. When my difficulty is when block, yeah, it's my first thing.
So blocking. So the toughest thing is, let's say, when a pitcher throws a slider in the dirt.
Yeah.
That's the toughest thing?
Yeah, when I start mm-hmm. catcher, but now I'm better in that team.
Have you had any friends from Barquisimeto who also signed pro contracts?
We have five friends when I in my year.
Mm-hmm.
One signed with Tampa Bay Rays, two with Minnesota Twins, and one in Detroit Tigers. Yeah, just in my years, just that.
Have we seen any players this year in the Midwest League who you knew from back home in Venezuela?
I know the pitcher, the late con is Luis Oviedo. He's from Barquisimeto too. I know that guy. Yeah, he just with your hand.
With Lugnuts catcher Gabriel Moreno, in 2017, you played your first minor league season. What did you learn your first season?
I was in my first years. I was in Dominican Republic. My first years, I learned my approach about the hit and catching get is block, receive, just that.
And then last year was your second year, and then you made it to the United States. Was that the first time you had ever been to the United States?
Yeah, it's my first time because when I stay here, I saw it's the same baseball, but the difference is like when I stay here, different is the street. I look. I'm surprised because I never see that the street all clean. Yeah, because but when about the play, it's the same ball. Yeah, just I fog in baseball.
Last year, you're first in the Gulf Coast League, and then you move up to Bluefield. How was Bluefield?
Bluefield is when I move up to Bluefield, I look pretty good because when I stay in GCL and Gulf Coast League, it's a la razón. Yeah, a la razón. Well, in Bluefield, is a little cold in both because I played my first year in the night. I played with a little fans. Mm-hmm. Just about it's pretty good experience.
Gabriel, it's really hot right now. How is it to be a catcher in that kind of heat?
Ooh, well, it's very hot. Yesterday I can breathe sometimes yesterday, but I try that because my work and I fought in place. Yeah.
After last year ended, how did you spend the off season?
I was in Venezuela,
mm-hmm.
and I work hard every day. My approach, my lead because we need to do a lot of lead because for catchers it's hard for that and just work hard just that.
When you say your approach, what were you working on with your approach? What were you trying to get better?
I'm trying my separation when I time the hit. Just that is my difficult thing about hit, my separation.
Does it feel better this year than last year?
Yeah, but in my approach, I feel better because the last year, I do something is I hit a lot of pitch, mm-hmm. the ball, strike, I hit a lot.
This you hit year, swung at everything.
Yeah, everything. This year is. I'm concentrating for just the sun strike.
And that brings me to my next question. What are you working to improve right now? So one thing is swing at the right pitches, make sure it's a strike.
Yeah. This year I focused that because when I was on the stand, I worked that. My approach and take the bad pitch and just that.
Y finalmente, con Gabriel Moreno, away from baseball, what are your favorite things to do?
My favorite thing is I play safe. I play soccer. I play a lot of soccer and sing.
And sing?
Just that.
How good of a singer are you?
I'm good. I'll try. But I'm good.
And then soccer, what's your position?
And my position is in the middle.
Center mid?
Yeah, center mid. Yeah, that's my position. Because in soccer, I'm lefty. Yeah.
So you're a left footer,
yeah.
But you throw and you hit right-handed.
Yeah.
Do you have a favorite soccer player?
My favorite is now is Neymar. Neymar Jr.
And your favorite soccer team is?
Now is Barcelona. Before is PSG.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
This interview you did entirely in English, solamente en inglés. Mm-hmm. Muchas gracias. How do you feel?
I feel pretty good. Yeah. It was my first interview in English.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
This has been Around the Nest. At Around Nest on Twitter. Big thanks to Hayden Godfrey. Thanks as well to the minor leaguer. Thank you to Jim Tarabokia, Tyler Murray, Pat Molacaro, Zach Helton, Rob Fay, Adam Jackson, my broadcast partner, although not on the show this week. You let us know any questions, any comments that you have, and we'll work to try to make this as available and accessible as we can. Till next time, I'm Jesse Goldberg-Strassler at JGoldStrass on Twitter. Until next week, enjoy the baseball.